Welcome to the next step. Hey, this is Father Vasquez, and welcoming you back to The Next Step, a podcast dedicated to looking at life, at the very fabric of our being, all through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the Inner Shoes Mission, the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center in Glendale, and of course is brought to you exclusively by the good people at the Apostles' Net. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. I'm so glad to have you back with us this week. We have a great show for you, full of a lot of information, too. We have an interview coming up with Carol Jeroyan. She's with the Association for the Retarded, and what more appropriate time than this? I mean, have you heard what's going on in the world? They're now calling retardation the R word because of the Ben Stiller movie. Well, of course, there's so much political correctness and political, let's say, sensitivities that are hitting us from right and left. So we'll be talking about that in a few minutes. But talking about politics, I mean, we're now putting politics and religion in the same sentence. And Rick Warren from Saddleback is interviewing Obama and McCain. I mean, you wouldn't even know that there was another side to Christianity the way they were talking about it. Remember us? We have to put up our hands about the Orthodox and the Catholics. What is it like when you're in the army? They give you like these dog tags and you get a P or a C. What about the O's? And God forbid you might be an I or a J. But and I know there's the B's and the H's too. But I want to talk a little bit about that too, because, and we're going to get to it deeper next week once that the candidates become official candidates. But did you hear what was going on at Saddleback? They were talking to McCain, Obama, and these people were answering questions about evil, about God, and I mean, some of it is scary. It is outright scary that these people could just look and say that my position in life is to do away with evil, and my position is to destroy evil. Well, no duh, shouldn't we all be wanting to get rid of evil? But you can't just go into places and start bombing. I mean, look what's happened with that kind of attitude, with we will take care of evil by creating more evil, and what do? We end up with these wars that take so many lives and so much time for us to really come to terms with as a people. I'm always taken by that line, you fight fire with fire. Who says? How about fighting fire with water? Or how about fighting hatred with love? How about fighting war with peace? I mean, is it possible? Well, I think it is. I think that the example that has been given to us so many times and over we see it. And one of the reasons why we started this broadcast on Armenian Orthodoxy was you have a group of people called Armenians who have practiced this Orthodox faith. And these people have never had weapons, and these people have never had the ability to amass armies. And for some reason, these people have lived, survived, and developed and continued. Well, there must be something to it. And we've been talking about that throughout these podcasts. But when you listen to these politicians, and when the McCain gets up there and he says, I will destroy evil, well, who's evil? What makes you think that your brand of evil is less of an evil than the other person's brand? You know, these are very dangerous terms. These are terms that we need to start looking at deeply, and not just on the surface. I have to tell you, the Rick Warren Saddleback debates, shall we call them, or the talks between the two candidates, gave me a lot of concern, a lot of reason to be concerned about as an American, as somebody who's concerned about the ethics by which we live, by which we educate our future generations. We'll be talking more about that in future broadcasts because it really is important as the election gets closer in America, as the largest country or the leader, let's say, of the free world. These concepts of freedom, of ethics, of morality, politics, all have to come into play for us. Well, from the debates, we could move over to Africa. And of course, that is a very special place for us in the In Issues ministry because we've aligned ourselves with people in Rwanda and, of course, done many, many activities for people throughout Africa as far as raising money and funds. And as you know, in a couple weeks, we're going to have an event. We're naming this year's Person of the Year, In His Shoes, somebody who exemplifies the philosophy of In His Shoes, walks in the shoes of others. This is the second annual award. Last year we gave it to Ben Kayumba of Rwanda. This year we're awarding it to Gabriel Starring, who just returned from Chad. Our producer Susie and I met with Gabriel yesterday, and we were just floored with some of the stories that he was telling us about what's going on in the refugee camps. And I think that anybody who is concerned about Africa, but even more, I think anybody who really has a sense of what faith is all about, if you believe that faith is beyond just a few words, that God is not just found between two covers of a Bible, but that faith is something that has to be lived, I really want to encourage you to plug into this event September 5th. You can find information about it on inhisshoes.org. Gabriel Starring, just returning from Chad, he will be talking about the genocide that is taking place in Darfur. And he will have visuals, he will have movies, he will have interviews. And this is so important for us that we, as a Christian community, as when we talk about orthodoxy, you know, we said a few minutes ago, there's a reason why we've survived. We haven't picked up the gun, but we've sure enough have been able to hold on to that cross and that faith that that cross brings with us. And now we have an opportunity to really impact a world that is hit with tragedies such as the genocide. And this is only part of it. I mean, if you look throughout Africa and because it's so pronounced in Africa. I mean, in the Congo itself, they've had more deaths today than if you put Iraq, Afghanistan, and Darfur together. And nobody's talking about the Congo. Darfur has had 400,000 people massacred. Millions are in exile, are outside in refugee camps. And this is only in a small section of Africa. Put with it the difficulties that we endure throughout the world. I mean, right now, look at what's going on in Georgia. Wasn't it interesting during the debate the other day? You know, McCain stood there and he said that Georgia is this Christian country, an early Christian country, and we as Christian people, of course addressing that to the Saddleback people that he was with, we have to align ourselves with Georgia. Well, I'm wondering if the same is going to hold true if, and God forbid, one day this happens where Artsakh, where Karabakh is again up for grabs between Armenia and Azerbaijan. And do you think that the free world, the McCains, will look at it and say, well, let's align ourselves with Armenia because they are a Christian country? Or do you think, more than not, they're going to align themselves with the oil producers? Of course, it's oil. And that's what's happening in Darfur right now. Darfur is producing oil, and guess who's buying it? The same people who are producing the Olympics. And, you know, this all plays in together. And it's overwhelming. But we have an opportunity, and I want to say an obligation and responsibility. But right now, let's stick with the opportunity. We have an opportunity to do something about it. I know for myself, I'm a child of genocide survivors. My grandparents were genocide survivors, and we get all worked up about justice. Turkey has not accepted their role in genocide. 1915. And you know, I fight for that and I want that justice to come about, but there is absolutely nothing I can do about the past. But today I have an opportunity to do something about what's going on in Darfur. And I want to challenge our listeners, because we do have a really, not only a politically sensitive listener base from what we've been hearing, but also a very conscious, let's say, one that has a conscience and one that has an ethical dimension to their lifestyle. So I really want to challenge you to really look into these things, get on board with our blogs, with our different writings, and certainly be there September 5th to share with us this time that we're going to have with Gabriel Staring and really applaud his work, but more importantly, get the word out about Darfur. And like I said, you can find all this information on our website at inhisshoes.org. Well, how about that? I got to throw a little commercial in there toward the beginning of this show. You know, as we move along on these shows, I know that people have been commenting about the music that we've been playing, and I've got a couple nice selections for you, with, unfortunately, a little bit of sad news, too. I had a couple losses that were very close to me this week, and the music will reflect that. But very nice tunes. I think you're going to all appreciate these coming up in the second portion of our show. But right now, we've got an interview for you. You know, these days, everything seems to be very, very tense when it comes to speaking and terms and how we identify one another, especially over the weekend. Ben Stiller movie came out, and there was all kinds of protest about using the R word. Talking about retardation. Well, we're going to have an interview that addresses this and many, many other things. So let's move over now to our interview mode and listen in. Yes, how's that for a smooth transition? Well, we have with us today Carol Juroyan with the Association for the Retarded, based in Glendale. She's taken the time out to be with us, share some ideas and some thoughts about the subject and maybe about some bigger things, about our perception of disabilities and, of course, what is our responsibility to others. So with that, Carol, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
A few years back, you invited me out to the center to see some of the work you're doing, the clients you service. Why don't we start there? Tell me a little bit about the work that you do and what the association is all about.
Well, actually, I retired about a year and a half ago. I served the association as executive director for 25 years. And the association started in 1954 to provide services for adults with developmental disabilities, primarily those with mental retardation, along with epilepsy and cerebral palsy. Today, the program provides a day program and vocational training, as well as three residential facilities and a senior program. And it serves about 65 adults, ages 18 up to 66 years old.
Before going on, can we talk a little bit about terminology? You know, of course, recently with this Ben Stiller movie coming out, we heard all the ruckus and all the demonstrations even about not using the R word in reference to retardation. I hear you use it quite freely. You also used another phrase, developmentally disabled. What's the proper term? How should we? You know, we're living in a very politically sensitive, cautious, I don't want to say correct, but politically cautious era. What's the proper terminology?
That's true. Developmental disability is a term that came about in the late 70s And it's an umbrella for mental retardation, cerebral palsy, epilepsy, and autism. So they were all grouped together under that term. The average person on the street doesn't know what a developmental disability is. It was used because it denoted a disability that occurs prior to the age of 18 and is permanent. So therefore, it affects the developmental stages of a person. Regarding the political correctness of the term mental retardation, I personally have an issue with the whole political correctness. Unfortunately, there is not a better term than mental retardation to describe the disability. It's used medically, and unfortunately, the American Association of Mental Retardation can't even agree on a new term. The term that I find very offensive is mentally challenged. I see this in the media. I hear it on television. I read it in the papers. Somehow the term challenged has arisen and is now being used. And the reality is, challenged to who? You or the person that's disabled? If you ask the person who's disabled, they find the term challenged very offensive, because they do not feel their life is challenged. We who do not have the disability think we're being very polite by using the term, but actually, as I said, it's offensive to those with the disability. They recognize their disability, and to them, they are individuals with mental retardation, just as I'm an individual who has glaucoma, or somebody else who has diabetes. Unfortunately, the term is used in a very negative way by the media and the entertainment industry. You watch a movie or a TV program with high school kids, and somebody says, "Oh, you're such a retard." So the term is being used in a very negative manner. And if the entertainment industry, I think, portrayed people with mental retardation in a positive way, like they did on L.A. Law, I think people would perceive it differently. I know I asked my clients several years ago how they felt about the term challenged. And they looked at me very perplexed, because they said, "This isn't Special Olympics. Challenge is a term when you're competing." And they don't view their life as a competition. So I guess I would say to all your listeners, please don't use that term.
Okay, there you have it. It's the definitive statement against some of our political sensitivities. Let's continue. I feel very fortunate having Carol, having her husband as part of our worshiping community, and they could attest that Glendale itself has gone through a major facelift over the last couple decades, especially because of the large population of Armenians, one of the largest concentrations outside of Armenia, outside of Yerevan. And here, of course, comes all kinds and manner of social difficulties, social challenges, problems. And Carol, I want to ask you, during the last 25 years that you've serviced this community, have you noticed a change in attitude? Has there been a change in the way they perceive the developmentally disabled, the retarded? Is there an acceptance? Is there a change? I'd like to hear from you, from your personal experiences.
That's a very good question. We started accepting Armenians with developmental disabilities, primarily mental retardation, in the mid-80s. And initially, the response was, "Oh, I have a disabled sister, a disabled brother, a disabled child, and I want to get them out of the house." The Armenian community still is surprised to learn that Armenians do have disabilities. Of the 65 adults that are currently served by the association, I would say a good 34% have Armenian heritage. These are Armenians from Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, and Armenia. And for the most part, they've never been in a program before they come to us. The parents are very hesitant, very embarrassed. You know, we had a young lady who basically had an IQ of maybe a 3 or 4 year old. She didn't know how to write her name. She could barely speak, because the parents had never encouraged her to do so. The attitude was, if you had a disabled child from the country you came from, you kept them to yourself. You didn't send them anywhere. You didn't provide any education for them. And they were a source of embarrassment. When Armenians come to this country, I think they're shocked to find out that there are actual programs for them. And they're very, very grateful. We had one young lady whose first name was Elizabeth. And we literally taught her to write her name in English one letter at a time. And it was such a feeling of accomplishment when she actually learned how to write Elizabeth. And that's a very long name. But I think the attitude has changed. And I think this is primarily coming from doctors or medical providers who are now saying to the parents when they take their son or daughter in, or their brother or sister in for medical help, that, you know, there's a place where your child can go to, where they can meet friends, have social activities, learn a job, and get out of the house. So there's a gradual change, but it is very, very gradual. And the parents, as I said, are very appreciative because they come from a culture where you never admitted that your child had a disability. And even to this day, if I mention that, you know, we have Armenians with mental retardation, some people are very surprised. The fact is, mental retardation doesn't make exceptions based upon nationality.
Well, it's one thing when a family doesn't accept disability within their own ranks, let's say, but it's a completely different story, a different dimension to the entire issue when communities don't accept. And I understand that there's prejudice, there is fear, but I'd like to hear some comments from you, because recently in the Glendale News Press, I know they covered a story about you, a profile of you, and there was mention in there that you had actually received threats of people who didn't want you to start a home for the disabled in their area. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the fears that come out of that?
This occurred when we were developing our third group home. And I actually had one of the neighbors on the street. This was after we had selected the home and were in the process of purchasing it. The neighbor actually came into my office. There was a chair in front of my desk for guests to sit in. He picked it up and threw it and said to me, "You will never live to see this house open." And I have to admit that I have never seen the devil in someone's eyes, but I saw it that day. It was like his eyes were just glowing red, and he was so angry. The neighbor subsequently moved before the project was completed, but it was very, very frightening to see neighbors so fearful. And I think There were two reasons primarily. One was the NIMBY, not in my backyard, attitude. I think people who private homeowners fear that their property values will decline if there is a home close to them that houses individuals with disabilities. And secondly, there's the fear that these people are violent, that they could cause harm. Since we were very close to three schools, there was concern that we might harm the children that were going to walk to and from school past this house. So unfortunately, there is this fear of the unknown. I'm happy to say that once the house was completed and the residents had moved in. That first Christmas, we took fruit cakes to all of our neighbors with a card, wishing them a Merry Christmas. And today, block kind of closes off once a year for a block party, and the neighbors love having our residents participate. So there are some new neighbors in the neighborhood, of course, but today they're accepted. It's the fear of the unknown, I think. The other experience I want to mention is when we opened our second home. There was a elderly woman living alone right next door. She, on the day we closed escrow, she came over because she saw me on the property. And she said, "Hello, I'm so-and-so, and I live alone next door, and I'm very concerned." I said, "What are you concerned about?" She said, "Well, my safety." And I don't know what she expected, that we were going to rob her or rape her or hurt her in some manner. But I assured her that our residents had no intention of harming her in any way. Long story short, years passed, and she became much more frail. And one day, she had a heart attack in her backyard. And it was one of our residents who happened to be in our backyard looking over the fence that noticed it. My manager and my residents went to her rescue. She survived the heart attack. And thereafter, every week, two of our residents would go over to her house and take out her trash and put it curbside because she couldn't do it. So it was kind of one of those stories from Touched by an Angel that went from extreme fear and hate to extreme dependency and trust.
So from your examples, we're to understand to overcome some of these prejudices, we help out, we have compassion, or we use fruitcakes, huh?
It may not work.
But tell me, do you have a formula? I'm sure your job was full of prejudices and fears. Did you have a special formula that made things work when there was this kind
of prejudice? You know, I don't have a set formula. I think you just try to do the best you can and have belief in yourself. Take one day at a time. It hurts when people say things that are incorrect and vindictive when you know otherwise. So I think, you know, I remember praying that each day, "God, just get me through today and let me handle each crisis." I think if you're certain of what you're doing and you persevere, you know, God will give you the strength to do that and the direction. Also, I think it helps to have some important people helping you along the way. You know, I was very fortunate. I had a wonderful board of directors. I had some support at the city level. And you kind of have to put an armor around yourself so these things don't hurt you so much. I remember there was a flyer that was distributed within a one-mile radius of one of the homes prior to our opening, claiming I was going to open up a halfway house for drug offenders, sex offenders, and I don't know, some other type of offenders. Oh, parolees. And this was the furthest from the truth, but it was to generate fear. And people had a misconception of what the house was going to be, obviously. And I remember I had two choices. One, to take this very personal and be angry, or just to forget it and move forward, try to correct the mistake as best as I could. So, you know, unfortunately, I don't have a pat answer. Each situation presents a different solution. I've always felt that, and my staff could tell you this when I was working, there's always a plan B. If a plan A doesn't work, there's always a plan B. And you look for that.
Carolyn, talking about prejudices and fears, how about as far as the community? And again, I don't want to focus exclusively on the Armenian community. It happens to be one we're involved with. But I think in all minority communities, you have this issue of what is our obligation to give back? We have these countries that open up their doors to us. Do we have some kind of obligation to give back? And if so, what is it? Or if not, why not? Can you speak a little bit about our responsibility as a minority within the larger context of things?
Well, we definitely have an obligation. How we do it is a little more difficult. I've lived in this community for over 25 years, and I've seen changes in it. And whenever you have a mass influx of one ethnic community, it's going to have an effect on everything that goes on in that community. There's issues of husbands and wives getting used to the freedom they have in America. You come to America and the woman has equal rights. And suddenly she's aware of that. And oftentimes the husband is extremely uncomfortable or threatened by that. The other issue is adjusting to the culture. Women, I think, tend to have a little easier time. I know I had an experience several years ago. I was volunteering at an ESL program conducted by Glendale College. And I had gone in on a Saturday morning to basically talk with this group of ladies who were going to practice their conversational English skills. And shortly before noon, I noticed they were getting a little uncomfortable and fidgety and getting ready to leave. Class was over at noon. And so finally I said, well, why are you all ready to walk out the door, before 12 o'clock? And one woman spoke up and said, you need to understand, we've told our husbands we've gone shopping. Our husbands don't know we're here learning English. They would be very upset with us if they knew that. And I felt very sad that here these women were trying to improve their lives, some probably to learn English to get jobs, and yet they were learning this in fear. And the fear was very real. Divorces increased because now husbands know there are ways to shield their money. And they're very clever and creative in doing that. Women get an education and start working, and the husbands and wives grow apart. Spousal abuse, the husband feels very threatened by the wife. So that's an issue. Youth, there's a tremendous emphasis sometimes on money. So young people graduate from high school, and instead of going to college and investing in education, they want to make quick money, and they want to live a very fast life, but it has very little future. And it oftentimes can lead to violence, drugs, alcohol, car theft, burglary, whatever. Recently, there was an article in the news press with one young man quoted as saying, everyone on the street has a gun. And that's an influx of violence in the community. And I realize cultures vary. I know within the Asian community, there is a great emphasis on education. So I think primarily I'm talking right now about the Middle East culture. But yes, I think we have a tremendous obligation. Where it begins is extremely difficult. It begins at home. It begins in school. It begins in the church. We all have our circle of support and circles of support. And that's our family, our relatives, our jobs, and our church. And those are the areas that we interact with. And I think each has to have an obligation.
Well, along the same lines, let me ask you, do we necessarily need to look beyond ourselves, or why should we look beyond ourselves? I mean, certainly I'm criticized enough by people saying that, well, you know, of course there's things going on in Armenia, the community itself needs help, why are you looking out to Darfur, why are you looking out to Rwanda, why are you helping other places? Tell me a little bit about what you feel like. Do we need to look beyond ourselves, or maybe it's misdirected?
That's a difficult question, because I think there's two ways of answering it. There's the correct way of answering it, and then there's my personal opinion. The correct way is, yes, we have to help those who can't help themselves, and we should be supporting the homeland and investing in their future and giving them guidance.
I want to hear your version.
My version? My version is charity begins at home. And, you know, my home is the house across the street, the house beyond that block, and the house beyond that block. My home is this community. And charity needs to begin here. You know, when I walk out on the street, I'm interacting with my community. This is where I live. And what goes on in my block or in the blocks beyond is my concern as well. We can't turn a deaf ear and or a blind eye or whatever the phrase you want to use and say, you know, problems don't exist and they'll just take care of themselves, because they're not taking care of themselves. You look at the number of Armenians, for example, who are in the prison system in California. You know, and they're there for pretty violent crimes or, you know, other issues of embezzlement or corruption. These are an embarrassment in some way to the culture. When I grew up, you know, we didn't have problems like that. But they're very prevalent now. So, you know, in my opinion, charity begins at home. And we have enough resources here to do it. It's mobilizing the people and organizing people with the talent to be able to do this. The Armenians have a population that are into the medical field or into the psychological field, that are into law enforcement. I mean, we have the talent here.
Carol, I'd like to go back to something you said earlier about the place of God, of the prayer life that you had, and how God was instrumental in doing so much in your life and in your work. And obviously, you talk about the talents that we have. And sometimes, as we all know, we have to appeal to a higher source for, let's say, an extraordinary help, an extraordinary ability within us. I'd like to ask you, in your experiences, having faced those prejudices, having faced serious, serious challenges, how important, what part did God play in all of that?
100%. I mean, as I said, every morning I would wake up saying, God, just get me through this, or give me the strength and the wisdom to handle this. And, you know, I was very, very blessed. For 25 years, God gave me a job that I absolutely loved. I think Confucius said, find a job that you love and you'll never have to work a day in your life. And God blessed me with that at a time where I didn't quite know what I was going to do with my life. God showed me a way, and I really feel that it was His direction and guidance that brought me to that position and enabled me to do the things that I was able to do. So I have to give Him 100% credit.
Well, Carol, I think that's a really beautiful way to bring an end to this interview, and I want to thank you for being with us. This is Carol Giroyan, who served 25 years as the executive director for the Association for the Retarded in Glendale, and I also know you're a globetrotter. We're gonna have to get to that at some future broadcast.
No, we took a 2-week trip recently to Egypt, and I was very fortunate to see a civilization and witness a history that is just really unparalleled, I think. Yes, I climbed part of the Great Pyramid in Giza, and yes, I rode a camel for 15 minutes into the Sahara Desert, but that's the extent of it. Thank you.
Well, thank you again, and God bless you, and I look forward to seeing you Sunday.
Thank you.
We do really have some quality people in our community. I'm so happy that we have this media, this means by which we're able to share some of their knowledge, some of their expertise and wisdom with a bigger audience. I did promise some music at the beginning of this podcast, and I have to tell you, I'm so encouraged by the letters that you send, by the comments, and it seems inevitable that inside each of those comments, there's somebody who's alluding to the different songs that we play, and I appreciate that. I'm glad you're enjoying this segment of the podcast as well. Today, I'd like to do a dedication because I did have a couple of losses during the past week, some difficult times. One was a young child, a one-month-old baby, who just passed away a couple days ago, and Zavin is his name, and our hearts and our prayers go out to their beautiful parents and the entire Jendin family. And the other person is Miriam Paprikin, who I had the good fortune of knowing over the years and serving as her pastor up in the San Jose area, but getting mostly close with her children. But she became an inspiration to so many people because of her just outlook on life, her positiveness, and her ability to really take on a lot of difficulties. Just a very, very special woman. I'd like to dedicate this particular song to both of these individuals, young Zavin and, of course, to Miriam. And in a way, if you listen to the song, it comes to us from the Vem radio disc. It's a song that starts off as a hymn, and listen to it, because it ends in a very unique manner. It ends with a beat. It ends with a continuation of life. And I particularly think it has a message for us, and particularly for this dedication. Thank you. Well, God rest their souls. Some very beautiful music for some beautiful people. And I hope you all enjoyed the music that we play and enjoy the topics that we have to share with you. And I always appreciate your comments and your reflections. That music, by the way, that we just heard comes to us from Them, and you can check them out at them.am. They are a group out of Armenia that is responsible for bringing a bit of spirituality to Armenian lives. Them believes that positive change comes about only through spirituality, and as such it introduces and nurtures values based on Armenian history and cultural heritage. So again, if you want to check them out, they're at them.am. Well, I take this opportunity to thank you for joining us. Drop us a line at epostle.net. In fact, get on board and put in your email, tell your friends about this podcast, and let's get the word out. I see our producer Susie is pointing to this flyer through the smoked glass. Or is it dirty glass? I don't know what it is. But anyway, she's pointing to the flyer about September 5th. So please, please mark that on your calendar. In fact, better yet, get on the website right now, inissues.org. Press on the button that says, I want my tickets right now, and get the tickets. Because, you know, we have a chance to make a difference in this world. We have a chance to say something about genocide unlike any other time in history. And, you know, when you get to that event, September 5th, we've got an incredible program for you. We've got an opportunity. You know, just about anybody who is worth seeing will be there. And, of course, it'll be a chance for us to make a statement, a bold statement to the world that, you know, people may have forgotten some people back in 1915, but here it is 2008, the evil continues, and we're not going to let the world close its eyes to what's happening out there. Well, that about wraps it up for this podcast. I hope you'll join us again next Wednesday when we issue our new podcast. In the meantime, I want to wish you the best. And for Susie, our producer, and for Ken, who should be scraping that glass, our engineer Ken, and for myself, Father Voskin, God bless you, and we look forward to taking the next step with you again next week.